I think it can get a little tricky with, at least in the past, with either being a Christian author or finding a book that's quote unquote Christian. There's this tendency, or at least there used to be, I think, to really, I kind of, when I talk about this, I compare it, I guess, to a clown car, where it's like, okay, the car is the book or the story. And I shouldn't say the clowns are the biblical message. Kind of this idea of shoving as much as we can. Story, all these lessons, all the morals, all the things that we want our kids to understand and to grasp. But then that just makes the story a vehicle.
Hello, and welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast. On today's podcast, we have Amanda Cleary Estep. She's an award-winning children's author and a book editor. She works in a cabin in the mountains of North Carolina. You're going to see from the background, she's not lying. She's also lived most of her life in the suburbs of Chicago, the home of the Tree Street Kids. Amanda and her husband together have 8 grown children and a border collie named Annie, who wakes Amanda up nearly every morning to write. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to meet both of you.
Yeah, Amanda, we are excited because we were just talking camera there for a bit. And I have to say, you know, we and I have 6 children. We've homeschooled for years. And one of the struggles that I personally have had, and a lot of other people, is what books do I let my kids read? And so I know we're going to be talking about that. And so I'm excited to get into that. But first, I want you to let the audience know who you are and what you're doing.
Okay, well, I am in my cabin right now. My husband and I moved here, just thought it seemed like an adventure. People are like, how did you end up in the mountains of North Carolina in this little holler, as they call it? We're obviously not from around here, as they say. It's like an adventure. So we are here, we're on 7 acres, just enjoying the critters and the beauty here in the mountains. And we have 8 children between us and lots of visitors to our home. And we do travel back and forth quite a bit to see all of our kids and parents and that. But I am an author. I'm a children's author. I've been a writer pretty much all my life. And I'm also a senior editor at Moody Publishers in Chicago. I work remotely with them and love that. That's my day job, I guess. The writing for children kind of happens in all those wee hours when, you know, we do what we love and feel called to do as well. So,
yeah.
So, Amanda, do you force your kids to read your books? Because I do. And the kids scream and they, why do I have to do it? Ham and a haw.
Just look at me.
As they get older, they're like, Dad, that's you did a pretty good job, Dad. Do you do that with your children?
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't force holidays, and I try not to guilt my children too much. But, you know, that's just kind of a natural thing. maybe comes with the territory. But one of the things I've realized, my 3 that I raised are not really natural readers. And I was a little mortified over that.
Yeah.
I'd read with them. I homeschooled for a couple of years, but I also I've always loved children's books, never stopped reading them. And so we read nightly, sitting, you know, we'd cuddle up and, you know, just the whole thing that you think you're supposed to do with your kids. And I loved doing it, and they would see me write, you know, they would see me, you might hear my border collie tip tapping around. So when they grew up and I didn't always see them with the book in their hand, I was like, what did you do wrong? You know? But the thing that's wonderful to me and that I have discovered later in their growing up is that all 3 of them love story. And so my son loves to watch films and kind of sit and talk about them and analyze them. He's tried his hand a little bit at screenwriting. Middle child, my elder daughter, she loves audiobooks, which she discovered much later in life. So I think we have to, as parents, kind of stay open to how are my children ingesting or taking in story. And she's always making up different characters, and she likes going to the Renaissance Fair and just all those kind of fun things. And then my youngest really enjoys verbally telling stories. So she can easily get up in front of an audience and just kind of off the cuff tell a story or communicate verbally that way. So as a parent, I wish I would have known that and been a little bit more aware of that when they were younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you said that, Amanda, because I'm sure there's a lot of moms out there, especially that are like, okay, good. There's an author, there's an editor here who raised their children and some of them didn't like to read. So I actually appreciate that. I just had a sigh of relief when you said that, because I think we have probably two out of the six real just love reading, love all of those stories. But like you said, it's so interesting that I didn't think about the storytelling part, because as you said, everyone loves stories. And so some people like to tell a story. And now that you're saying that, and I know a lot of listeners are like, my kids like to tell stories. Uh-huh. So that is something. So getting back to that on storytelling, and even if you could have done it differently with your children, because I think sometimes it's easier now that we're past that, what would you have done in a sense differently? Or what could you tell parents out there to encourage kids and not be so hard? Like my husband said, you know, you got to read this by this age or whatever. But how would you naturally and beautifully encourage storytelling?
Mm-hmm. Part of it, I believe, was I have a family with storytellers in it. So it really involved, I think, my kids seeing me listening also and kind of encouraging them to listen. So their grandfather is a big storyteller. I mean, he just loves to sit down and reminisce and talk about stories from his childhood. And humor was such a big part of that. So that engagement with that and listening to their grandpa and just my listening to my father. Mm-hmm. And I would tell my kids too that, and they don't really remember my grandmother very much, but I would sit for hours with her and just listen to all the stories she would tell. And the important part of that too, and that's why I think we should share our stories with our kids too. Like, oh, I remember when so-and-so and, you know, we do get to a point where, you know, even with my dad, I'm like, you know, I'll be like listening and he's like,
I heard that one.
But it's still funny the 100th time, you know? So I think listening is a big part of that, modeling that. And then sharing that, you know, our own stories are so important because it's part of our legacy. It's part of our history.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I would have changed anything in particular, because I didn't want to force my kids to love. Mm-hmm. You can't really force somebody to love something.
Right.
So you really have to model it and then find the ways that your kids are already expressing certain things. You know, do they love story? Because like I said, like maybe they make things up, you know, they make up stories and then you can kind of say, oh, well then what happens? You know, my middle one who I mentioned that loves audiobooks, you'd get her in the back of the car and it would just be like, blah, 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 blah. And then blah, 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 blah. And then, and you know, is she just some story to tell for some reason?
I love that.
It's too is.
Yeah. No, I love that answer. Beautiful.
What type of stories excite you to write? Number one, part one of that question. And the second part is, how do you compose a good story in a book?
That's a big question.
I'm a big guy. I go big. Go big or go home. That's my motto.
I've heard you talk about being Italian. So.
Oh, gosh.
Big meals and
everything's big here. Yeah.
Well, as I said, I really love writing for children. That's just kind of my go-to. I have my series of books, The Tree Street Kids. That's a 6-book series, and with Moody Publishers. That's middle grade. So that's middle grade is considered 8 to 12 years old. Not middle school, but middle grade is a publishing category. And then I also write. I really do like writing for young adults. So that would be considered 13 to 17. And most of my fiction is realistic, you know, kind of every day. What does the world look like? How do I find adventure in my backyard? Those kind of things. How do I stop and like appreciate what's around me and see the beauty, see the excitement and stand in awe of certain things? So I really like to write those kind of stories to engage the kids and pull them into the story. And fantasy is one of my favorite things to read, and I do enjoy writing it. But I really want kids to feel like they're part of a realistic story that feels bigger, but not unattainable, I suppose. out of reach. So that's why I like a little mild peril in my stories. Put the kids like on the brink of the ravine and looking for whatever they're looking for in the woods and those kind of things. But, and then as far as writing a good story, and this is where I think it can get a little tricky with, at least in the past, with either being a Christian author or finding a book that's quote unquote Christian, there's this tendency, or at least there used to be, I think, to really, I kind of, when I talk about this, I compare it, I guess, to a clown car where it's like, okay, the car is the book or the story. And I shouldn't say the clowns are the biblical message, kind of this idea of shoving as much as we can. Yeah. Story, all these lessons, all the morals, all the things that we want our kids to understand and to grasp. But then that just makes the story a vehicle instead of a beautiful thing unto itself. And that's not, I don't think that's how God operates, right? Mm. So the story has to be beautiful and worthy and have all these good qualities, whether we even mention God or anything. We may have those biblical principles or ideas, or because I can't write without going through my Christian lens. It's going to be there no matter what. Hopefully.
Right. Yeah.
It is, right? Yeah. But if I set out intending, and of course I want to teach. Of course I want to communicate a certain message. That's there. But if that's all I want to do, and then there's no actual story to tell, there's nothing to draw the reader in to engage their moral imagination and say, oh, what would I do in this situation? And Jesus did that with parables. I think that's a really good example of how to tell a beautiful story and also put the listener or the reader in that place so they can imagine and ask those important questions.
Yeah. Curious, what is the feedback that you get from your children, but from others, even the young adults, the books that you're writing? What is the feedback? What are the lessons people come to you with?
One really big one is that the parents are super excited that the books are set in the 90s.
Okay, that's funny.
There's like that's just there's
they can relate.
Right. It's the perfect age. The readers are the age for, this almost feels like historical fiction probably. But for the parents it's nostalgic.
Yeah.
And that the kids are out riding bikes and they don't have a cell phone. They've got walkie-talkies or maybe mom's just like, hey, if you go somewhere else, check in. But go ahead for a few hours, riding your bike around the neighborhood, whatever. So the parents really liking that. They also like what I think this has been, I feel this warms my heart when I hear this from parents, is that I guess I approach certain topics gently. And there's nothing super heavy, I would say, but there are things my kids went through or questions they asked or how, like, as far as like faith, well, what does God have to do with, the kid down the street being bullied or me being bullied or, those daily situations. And the kids really like the feedback I get from them. They all have different favorite characters. So sometimes I'll get like a little fan mail or a message on social media and the kids will usually say things like they love Midge, the little sister, because she's so funny. So they really like her, or they'll just relate to a situation. So in Jack versus the Tornado, which is book one, Jack is moving from his grandparents' farmhouse with his family to the suburbs of Chicago. And that's a huge change. And so many kids have had to move, leave their home or, and so I'll get kids that are like, oh, that happened to me, Jack is just like me or something like that.
So it's super relatable, it sounds. And I do love the parents' reaction because I think when even if our kids watch a show or something where, now it's like, oh, now we can actually have that conversation of what it was like. So it is kind of opens up conversations with the parents, which is brilliant. By the way,
I have to say the publisher at Moody when we were, this isn't part of my job to write these books, but there was an idea he had put forth about like, oh, it'd be kind of cool if these were set in the 90s. I was like, I know about the 90s. Our fiction series.
That's really cool.
I raised my kids.
Yeah, no, I love that. And even like the fact that you said there are subtle, that you put things in subtly. I think sometimes, you know, when we're trying to teach our children lessons, sometimes it's those subtleties from other authors. For instance, you, your mother. And so you do know what to put in there. And they have to do with Christian values, which again, you know, are we living that at home? And then you have a book to come in. And I want to get to the question, what I originally asked when we first came on was about the struggle that some parents like me have about what do I bring into the house? There's so many books out there. There's so much stuff and you can't read it all. I mean, I knew parents early on when they had maybe one or two kids, they would read the book first and then give it to the kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's so much at this point. And so what do you suggest or how do you go about helping parents find good quality reading for their children with Christian values?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's different things, but I would say there's kind of if I were going to just give you two, I would say one is don't avoid the library. I think a lot of people are really like, they've become so frightened of the library, you know, and librarians and the scary librarian.
Yeah.
And I do understand some of that, but I could also take my child into a bookstore and have, you know, an issue as well.
Sure.
Or, and this is with anything. A child could walk into their friend's house. And I remember being exposed to certain things at, you know, kids' houses, you know, back in the 70s.
Sure.
And so there's always going to be that, whether it's a television show, whether it's somebody's language,
exactly. I mean,
you name it, right?
Yeah.
So with something like that, as an author, I've really tried to get to know my local librarians. And the lovely thing about local librarians, especially in at least my experience in smaller towns, is they're very happy to carry your books, to carry Christian books. Mm-hmm. When we get to know them, and it's not like every librarian is putting the scariest possible book out in front, you know, and handing it to every child. So as with anything, we should go to the library with our kids. And then we should also say, and maybe state it overtly in our own homes, these are the kind of books we read and why. These are the kind of books mom and dad read and why. These are the kind of books we put on the shelf and this is why. So we have kind of these, what we value, what we believe extends not just to where we go to church or how we speak, but what we read, what we watch, all those different things. So the kids just will begin to learn that. And because at some point they're going to have to apply that on their own, right? So I would say, you can go to the library and say, you know what? I found this really great series of books. And I noticed that you don't carry it. Could I request that the library carry?
Nice.
And so when you start to find books that you like, and they are out there, start requesting them at the library. And here's another really great source are besides trusted friends, family members, those kind of things. There's some, I would like to mention just a few amazing websites that will also look not just at Christian books, but they'll also review some of the general market books that are out there and classics that a lot of homeschoolers really enjoy reading. So the first one is redeemedreader.com. And Moody Publishers actually just put out a really beautiful book by that team called The Redeemed Reader. So that's an excellent resource, and they will give honest reviews of books. The other one is Good Book Mom and PlumfieldMoms.com. And those are both excellent review sites, and they are faith-based. And Good Book Mom even has like an alternative to the Scholastic Book Orders. Mm-hmm. Great course. And then get to know authors. Go to their websites. And it's not always a guarantee, but for the most part, an author will usually not change up the way they're doing things, you know, like deep into a series. It can happen, but know authors and try to stick with those authors and other ones that maybe they recommend.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, I didn't think of doing it for books. I would always do it for TV shows and movies with parents, parentreview.com, something like that. It will give you everything about the show and anything you want to know, which is always helpful. But that's great. I appreciate that.
This question is for our 14-year-old. She is a prolific writer. I mean, I read what she wrote just an hour ago. And I'm like, are you writing that? Are you using AI? It's like, this is just beautiful. It's incredible. But she said to me the other day, Dad, I've got writer's block. How do I get over that? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I guess to you, I'd love to ask you, when you get that self-doubt, or something comes up and goes, I don't know how to get over this, or I have writer's block. Any tips on overcoming that?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of things. And it's really, it can be, you know, just kind of specific to the person. But First, I try to not talk about writer's block ever.
Okay.
I love that.
I just kind of just don't acknowledge. If I'm tired, if I feel like I'm stuck on something, whatever it may be, then I just take a break from it. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes having a couple, you know, maybe something else to write and work on, it might be a completely different story. It might be a different genre. I might, now this is going to sound funny, but there is like some science behind this. And it's like an actual brainwave change. So when I have gotten, I will say stuck, not blocked, stuck on something that I'm writing, and I really need to, because of course I have deadlines as well, there's two things I do. One is, and I don't know the exact science behind this, but I'm pretty sure it's like a tactile kind of a feeling thing. I started this way, actually. I wrote almost all my books by hand, the first draft. So I don't know if she types. I don't know if she writes by hand. Do you know?
She does both. She writes both. By hand, and then she'll transfer it on the computer. And then sometimes she writes. And I love that you're bringing this up.
Yeah. So, you know, it might just be, so if she's not typing all the time, she actually is writing by hand, then this isn't maybe going to apply as much. But for anyone else who's interested in writing, I think when I go to, you know, my notebook, I can be messy. And because I'm an editor, a book editor, I really want to make sure that I don't have my editor's cap on when I'm trying to write.
Yes.
And write it with as much abandon and as messy as I can that first draft. I need to develop a certain part of the story, I might do like a word kind of cloud. So I'll write something and circle it, and then I'll just kind of draw like spokes in all different directions, and you know, where could this go? Kind of the what if kind of game. This is the thing that might sound a little funny, but it has worked, and this is the brainwave thing. So we know that sometimes people get very creative ideas when they're sleeping or middle of the night, just about to fall asleep. And there is research on this, but I will actually, if I really want my ideas to flow and I'm stuck, I will lie down for a little bit in just a quiet space. And I'll just think a little bit about, you know, whether it's a scene or something in character development, and I'll just kind of let my mind wander, and I'll get in this very restful state. And there's some brainwave change when that begins to happen, when you get into that very restful state. And it's amazing how that suddenly opens some door. I'm not lying there trying to figure it out. I'm just kind of letting the thoughts come, and I'm really trying to rest with it. So that has worked for me. I don't do that often, but it has worked every single time I've done it.
I love that.
Now, this would not be a Julia and Gino podcast without me interrupting and saying business, mentioning something about business. But everything you've mentioned there, this could be for a business executive, somebody who's sitting around trying to brainstorm a new idea, trying to increase revenue, where they have, you said no block, just stuck. We can't say I have a mental block. I'm stuck on this problem.
But I just don't.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think you're right, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because if you're telling yourself that I'm blocked, that I can't solve this problem, it goes for writers, it goes for moms, it goes for business owners, whoever. I love that, actually. And I think lying down, I could see the merit in that. I mean, all of the older gurus, the older self-helpment gentlemen that used to teach, whether Zig Ziglar or Jim Rohn, they always talked about taking a break during the day and actually napping for 5 or 10 minutes was actually really good, and it shows positive results. And I think what you're talking about is you're just breaking the state. You're just relaxing and allowing. I love that. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And you know, you bring up a good point about just creativity in general, because we tend to think of creativity as, well, oh, well, I'm not a creative person because I don't paint or I don't write stories, when it's really like business people are creative, moms are creative, parents are creative, because you're always trying to problem solve or to come up with, you know, the creativity is just a constant thing that we're always doing. So,
yeah, no, I agree. 100%.
I've got one more question. This one may take like a while for you to answer. And it's one of those things that we're coming across right now with AI, artificial intelligence. Oh, yeah. How is that going to take over your space as far as there's lack of creativity? I mean, like when we grew up, you had mentioned tactile. It's actually incredible for you to work on a problem, have struggles, be able to dive deep, go down a rabbit hole. And it seems as if AI now has just eliminated that and said, here you go. Here's your 10 chapters and I'll help you. Do you see, well, there's actual benefits. Can you give us some of the benefits as well as some of the drawbacks and maybe just letting parents know where to be careful about the use of artificial intelligence?
Okay. Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is a huge one, but the most helpful things that I can think of, and I have been thinking a lot about this, to be very careful. I would say be very, very careful with this because it is just accelerating to the, I mean, at light speed. So one of the things I was going to say earlier too about this idea of storytelling and why it's so important. And again, whether that's books, whether it's sitting down and watching a good movie, and there is, it's Jonathan, is it Haidt? Is that how you pronounce his last name? I forget.
Haidt. That's what you're looking, yes.
He was talking about the fact that even a movie is good for kids because you have this story arc, right? And that's how our brains work. And that's how they need to work. But because kids are used to this, like little blips and blurbs and this scrolling and just so many things coming at them so quickly, that's affecting the way our, well, one, attention span, of course, but just also the way our brains are functioning. Can we carry on a long conversation? Can we listen? Mm-hmm. Can we process? Can we create a story? What my concern is, so some of the good things, I mean, we use AI to a point where it's like, okay, well, we'll do like in publishing, maybe we'll do a plagiarism check or we'll run a manuscript through a program that'll check, you know, oh, did this get picked up accidentally even from somewhere else and we didn't cite it correctly, something like that. Uh-huh. Or, you know, we're doing spell check or that. And so there's uses for certain, you know, technology, right? I found this, and I'm going to very loosely paraphrase an author I have worked with, Joe Sutphin, he's an artist, an illustrator. He illustrated I don't know if you've seen this, Moody, it's Little Pilgrim's Progress, the illustrated version. Absolutely gorgeous book. I was the editor on that, but the true genius of it is just the and all of the characters are animals. So Joe did that work. And he also did the graphic novel of Watership Down, which is one of my favorite books. But a brilliant person. There was, I don't know if you've seen this news about Solomon Ray, who is, I think he was like up on the charts of Christian soul music or something, but he's not an actual person.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, there is a Solomon Ray, apparently. I was just reading the Christianity Today article. There is a Solomon Ray who is a Christian singer, and he was getting all kinds of messages about this. But there is a non-human Solomon Ray whose music has just is all over. Just everyone's talking about it. So I believe it was on the Instagram site, the Instagram account of Christianity Today, Joe said something really beautiful. And what he said was, you know, there's this idea of the suffering artist and not just like, oh, I'm the starving artist because I can't make any money. Mm-hmm. It's that creativity and art should take something out of us. There should be some kind of sacrifice there. There should be some kind of like, I mean, after I've written something, I'm exhausted. I need that nap, you know, I really do. So for something just to be generated is a little, it's terrifying to me, actually. And I also had this interesting conversation with an acquisitions editor, and this was like last year before things were really just like going crazy with all of this. And we were asking, well, what does this mean for publishing? What does this mean for editors or for authors? You know, people are saying, well, we don't have to worry about it because it's soulless. There's the Holy Spirit isn't working through AI, or, you know, people are going to know that it's not from a person. here's my concern is that kids' brains have changed if they've been, they process things differently because especially a generation that's been using technology since the beginning of their lives. They've been looking at screens and things are digitized and everything's different than when I was growing up. So I don't know why we wouldn't, you know, as we introduce children to different kinds of storytelling, if they're used to AI storytelling, that's all they know.
Yeah.
Right. So they're not going to say when, once they turn 20, oh, well, this is soulless.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because they may not know any different. Mm-hmm. All they've known maybe, you know, in the next generation is AI books or mm-hmm. AI music mm-hmm. or, so that's the concern to me is, do all of us just start to become so used to something that we can't tell the difference anymore? Yeah.
Well, that's why you have to step into the light. And I think we do as well, because I love that what you said about artists, because you are giving a piece of yourself. And I think we need to be creative in this world, whatever venture you're in. Once again, if you're in business, to be creative, to be problem solving, to be able to create value. If you're an artist or a musician, to be able to have your voice out there, to be an author, to write those words out and to actually have part of you, your story, to have your imprint, you can tell. I mean, right now we can tell something that's generated through AI and something that isn't. When you read it, you can hear somebody's voice. It's still,
we're also older.
But like you said, you made a great point about that, because we know the difference on that. And like music from the 70s and 80s, rock music today is just awful. So that's what I was thinking when you mentioned that. I'm like, wow. I mean, it's happening in real time right now. It's like, wow, that makes total sense to me.
I think that's the importance of always encouraging storytelling. From mm-hmm. personal experiences, you know, you hear from your grandparents at some point, you'll be mm-hmm. a grandma, you know what I mean? And it just goes on. And I think to encourage that in every home mm-hmm. is just to increase storytelling.
Right. And I think it's good to tell your kids, like, you know, it's okay that this is hard.
Yes.
Things don't have to be easy. Sometimes the harder it is, the more beautiful it is by the time you're done with it.
Sure.
And so, yeah, this isn't going to be painless. Mm-hmm. You know, reading that book for history class or literature class might not be the most enjoyable thing, but that's okay. I mean, there's always going to be hard things in life we have to do. But I think the more I just would be, with the AI, be really careful with it and set boundaries just like we do with other technology.
Yeah, I love that. Baby, you have a good wrap up. I'm always excited to
As far as the wrap up, Amanda, before I do wrap up the show, where can the listeners get a hold of you, learn more about you, learn more about Moody's as well?
Yeah. Well, I guess the easiest place to go to see my books, at least my book series, and get a link to some of my other writing and my newsletter is treestreetkids.com. So kind of everything's right there. And then moodypublishers.com. Of course, my books are there and you can find Moody's other children's books. They, you know, these new releases that they've had over the last about five years. So there's some really wonderful books there. And I'm not just saying that because I've edited a lot of them. But we've become very passionate about, you know, speaking into that space.
I've loved a lot of things that we've talked about. A couple of things that I love to wrap up. RedeemedReader.com. I think you should all go visit that. GoodBookMom.com. I don't know why there's not a GoodBookDad.com, but it's okay. Go to GoodBookMom.com.
There are something for you to start.
I love the fact of how
moms are doing it. That's
I love how you guys discuss about choosing the right book. It's important on how to choose the right book. I also love, honestly, for me, the conversation was about having the block and sitting down there and not calling it a block. So I'm going to share this with my daughter after I get off, because she was really diving into that and saying, Dad, and it's just incredible. Just let your kids learn. And the last thing that I'll mention is when you talk about how a child learns, there's three modalities. There's visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. And that's so important that you said that. At least you learned that. Most of us don't learn that. And some of us are visual, like you said. Some of us are auditory, and some of us are kinesthetic. We like to touch and to feel as we learn. I'm the kinesthetic type. I have to do it or else I can't figure it out. And it's okay. And if you learn your child's modality, you can really lean into that and then teach them. If they don't want you to read them a book, but maybe you turn on an Audible and you share the Audible, you'll see how much things change between they start enjoying things, and it'll be a lot easier for you to teach them as well.
Right. Yeah. Great points.
So once again, what was the website?
treestreetkids.com.
Say that three times fast.
I can't. I don't know who came up with that. That name.
It's interesting because I was reading the bio and I'm like, Tree Street Kids, Tree Street Kids, Tree Street Kids, treestreetkids.com. Thank you, Amanda, for being here today.
Oh,
and
as
always, we just want to thank the listeners for being part of the show today. We're Gino and Julia Barbaro of Barbaro 360, and we'll see you on next week's show. Thanks, everyone.